right. We stopped last week with the, I believe, the gates is how I marked my notes, with looking at these gates as we're looking at this brochure of the New Jerusalem, kind of a travel pamphlet for what the New Jerusalem will look like, which will be suspended upon the earth during the millennial kingdom, and then will come down on its foundations, which we'll look at here in a little bit. But we're going to look at chapter 21 and verse 12 and verse 21. By the way, I probably got sent through email or text or phone calls more questions about the eclipse because of what many people had posted. You know, I feel like I want to be careful when I say this because I respect the work of her dad, but Ann Graham Lotz posted a blog on her ministry page and about this being a sign of God's judgment against the world and against the United States, and then had a YouTube clip from a pastor in Australia. I think it's a fairly lengthy one. I watched enough of it, and I've heard his name before. It's Steve, and his last name, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but it starts with a C. It's like C-I-N-A-C-C-I-L-L-A, something like that. But he is a known false teacher, which is very disturbing. You know, I'm good friends with Ann Graham Lotz's son-in-law, and but I just think that Ann's problem, and like I said, I'm just pointing this out so you can decipher whether I say it or she says it or anybody says it, because I don't want to say anything. You know, I know she knows the gospel, but I think she's just confused on end time events. And she, I did a little research on her eschatological views, which is the study of the end times. And she gets where she mixes the second coming and the rapture and the signs before the rapture and the signs before the second coming. Just kind of gets them all jumbled. And I can understand that. You know, it's hard sometimes to decipher that information. But it's poor exegetical work on both of their parts of Matthew chapter 24, Luke chapter 21, and Revelation and 1 Thessalonians. Romans or 1 Corinthians chapter 15, I think, which makes it very clear that the next major event, as I said Sunday, in the history of the church is the rapture of the church, which is a signless event. So earthquakes and natural disasters and eclipse and things like that are not things that are happening now, are not the things that are being explained before the Lord comes back to earth. And so nothing has to take place. There's going to be no sign of the rapture of the church. It's just going to happen. Now, I do think that there are certain events, but I don't think like an eclipse. You know, they had one in 1979. You know, that's just a phenomenon that takes place every so many years, and it's predictable, you know. So I don't think that the things that the Bible are talking about, things that are going to take place during the tribulation period, those are the signs that Matthew is recording as Jesus is asked by his disciples, what is the sign of your second coming? What's the sign of you bringing in your kingdom? And he gives them those signs. And in fact, he tells them, if somebody tells you to go here and look, don't go there, you know. So there's a difference between the rapture of the church and the second coming of Christ. And so you know now know you got 1,007 years. In fact, I had somebody Tuesday, the eclipse take place on, it was Monday, wasn't it? Yeah, I'm glad it's over with. I got tired of hearing about it, to be honest with you. So my son sent me a video. It was really neat. Only he would send this. They had a white cat, and someone was holding the white cat, off camera. You couldn't see the person. You could just see them holding the white cat. And then this black cat slowly moved in front. I said, can't you please do something with this creativity that you have? And they had a cat eclipse, you know, and as soon as the cat got in front of the white cat, they stopped for a moment, and then it moved on, you know. Maybe you could do something with your talent. So, yeah, so many. Yeah, so the thing is, the reason I bring that up, because I bet I had over 100 emails from people that I know, from my old church, from family, to all over the place, that were asking me, based on what she had posted, and then other people reposting it on different social media sites. And it got a lot of people up and, you know, kind of panicked about it. And it's, you know, so just, you just need to know your Bible and have a good grid of theology and doctrine, which hopefully, I mean, you're getting, you know. And I think, I know for a fact, a lot of you are better equipped today to understand that and decipher that than you were maybe 5 or 6 or 7 years ago. So just evaluate, even if I say it, just because Charles Stanley says it or Chuck Swindoll or Billy Graham or myself, whatever, don't take it as the gospel. Read and know the Bible, because nobody has a complete handle on the truth unless they're teaching at Ross Baptist Church on Wednesday night. And I'm just kidding. Yeah, well, not only a handful of people in the church. And I was really encouraged, because guess what? The handful were the youth. And they were having conversations with their mom and dad. And that was great, you know, because they hadn't been in here. And they asked about it Sunday. And they got a drink from Niagara Falls when we kind of went through it. And they were like, so I said, you guys asked. So, but I tell you, man, I just have a blessing teaching them on Sunday morning. They are just really a joy. They really are, and I'm just amazed. And if you need good notes, see Hannah. Hannah Nutt is an awesome note taker. In fact, Seth was even sitting beside her one time, and I was asking questions, and I saw Seth going, looking at Hannah's notes. You know, we had a saying in school: when in doubt, look about. So. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was, it had a definitely path where it was like a 99% blockage. My niece, one that I've told you about, won the Gold Key Award that's in Carnegie Hall. She actually went to Greenville. She's at Barton. She's a freshman, and she's studying, majoring in business and minoring in photography. And so they allowed her to go down there, and she took some pictures of it. She had a special filter or something on her camera or whatever. So I told her to send them to me. She said, well, I'm going to wait before I start sending them out, make sure they don't win something first. So I sent her a text back, and I said, Lauren, but this is your uncle. She said, yeah, I know. So I didn't have any chips with her, I guess. So, all right, let's look at verse 12. Verse 12 states this. It had great and high walls with 12 gates, and the gates had 12 angels, and the names were written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. And then it says, there were 3 gates on the east, and 3 gates on the north, and 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. So you got 3 times 4, which is 12, and every direction. And the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And so here we see that the nations of Israel, as well as the 12 apostles, are going to be significant on this wall and these gates that go around the New Jerusalem. And then in verse 21, it says this, "And the 12 gates were 12 pearls." And I remember Dr. Pentecost. I took Daniel in Revelation, which was an elective from Dr. Pentecost. Mark Hitchcock and Neil Winstead and I took Dr. Pentecost for everything he taught. Every elective he taught, we took together. And it really gave me a great foundation to understand the totality of God's plan in the Scriptures by sitting under him. But I remember that one of the students in the class asked about what these 12 pearls are going to be like, you know, with this big, huge wall and these gates. And Dr. Pentecost, he had a great dry sense of humor. He said, "I can appreciate your question, but I think you're asking the wrong question." And everybody in the class was like, uh-oh. He said, "I think you ought to be asking, where are those oysters?" You know? So it's one huge pearl, you know, that's going to, you know, obviously God doesn't need an oyster to create a pearl. But it says each one of the gates was a single pearl. That's going to be a big pearl, isn't it? I mean, I think it's just, you know, John is trying to describe this scene, this vision that he is given, which is indescribable, you know? How many of you, and I know most of you couldn't care less about golf, but how many of you have ever watched the Masters on TV? Yeah, I mean, most people have and seen Augusta. I had a friend of mine from Goldsboro that played on the PGA Tour for about 25 years, and he actually played in it in 1997, the year Tiger Woods won by 12 shots. But April the 8th, that year was my 40th birthday, and he had won the 1996 Sprint International. That's what got him an invite to the tournament. And he called me and asked me if I wanted to go. I'm like, "Well, that's a stupid question, you know?" I said, "Absolutely." And so he gave me two tickets to go to the Masters. And I had watched it on TV. Obviously, this was before the high-definition TV and the 4K and stuff. But I remember walking behind the clubhouse and standing there, and I went, "Wow." I mean, because TV doesn't do it justice. I mean, it is, I mean, amazing. And I remember Neil Winstead, one of my seminary classmates, we actually went together. We both flew into Atlanta and then drove over to Augusta. And we had no place to stay because all the hotels for miles, I mean, I think you had to go like a couple hundred miles away, you know. And I had a guy in my church whose mother-in-law lived in Augusta. And I told him I was going to Augusta, but I couldn't find a place to stay. And he called his mother-in-law, and she went and stayed with a friend and let us stay at her house. So all it cost me was a plane ticket and a rental car, you know. So the Lord provides, you know. But I remember Neil and I both standing behind that, and we were talking about how TV didn't do it justice with the undulation and how open it is. And you can't believe the grass. I mean, it's all the same height. It's all the same color. There's not a weed. I mean, they wrap the sandwiches in green paper. So if you know, trash gets on the ground, you don't see it on TV. They got thousands of people walking around. If somebody puts a cigarette butt on the ground, it's off. They pick it up immediately. I mean, it's unbelievable. And I remember thinking, how would you describe Augusta to someone that hasn't been there? That's actually even seen it on TV. And Neil's response was, just like John would try to describe heaven to us. He said, it's indescribable. So, you know, that we have a lot of questions about what is this New Jerusalem going to be like? I mean, I can't imagine a pearl this big and it being a gate. You know, what are the gates made out of? Is it pearl too? What are the hinges like? Is it polished? I mean, and all I can say is it's undescribable or indescribable. You can't fathom. Eye has not seen or ear has heard, you know. But we were having this kind of friendly discussion, and then these guys got into it about whether there's going to be animals in heaven and stuff. And I don't think there is, you know. The Bible doesn't say there's going to be animals, and people often misuse the lion laying down with the lamb. Well, that's in the millennial kingdom. That's not in the eternal state. Now, you know, I'm not going to draw a line in the sand and go to my death on there's not going to be animals in heaven, because some people are very attached to their animals, including myself, you know, with some of the pets that we've had. But, you know, animals don't have souls and stuff. But here's the thing. When you get to heaven, if there's no animals there, you're not going to realize it. It's not going to be, because God's going to be there. And that's what makes heaven heaven, is God is there, you know. And we have our glorified body. And you're not going to miss whatever you think you have to have now in this earth, okay? There's a lot of things I wonder about, you know. I remember when I was a little kid, I was wondering if there was going to be dirt bikes in heaven, you know. And my mother's answer was theologically correct. If that's what it takes for heaven to be heaven, yes, they'll be there, you know. But you won't have that same desire. Your desires will be different. Your value system will be different. And I think it changes as you grow, you know. So the gates shows us access. And then 21:14, we've already read that, talking about these foundation stones. And then in 19 and 20, it says, the foundation stones of the city wall were adorned with every kind of precious stone. The first foundation stone was jasper. The second was sapphire. The third was chalcedon, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardis, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprase, the 11th jacinth, the 12th amethyst. Now, here's the thing. He's just describing these beautiful foundations. And we talked about, when we were talking about the millennial kingdom, that the New Jerusalem would hover over the earth. And then after the earth is destroyed and we get a new heaven and a new earth, then the New Jerusalem will come and have these foundations that seemingly will go into the earth. And I believe, I don't have any reason not to believe, I believe it'll be the location of where Jerusalem is now. I think, you know, God has made that piece of land by his choice a very precious site for him. You know, Israel, a little slither of land that draws so much attention to itself. And I'm a firm believer that externally, when I talk about external evidence, you have internal evidence, which you find in the Scriptures, external evidence, which is outside the Scriptures, that one of the greatest arguments that there is a God and that God has a plan is the overall hatred for the Jews and their survival. You know, I mean, there's no other nation and or race that is as hated as the Jews. Just look at Hitler, you know, and what he tried to do. And it's amazing, even now, you know, with the terrorists and things, you know, they still, Iran and Iraq and that whole Middle East, you know, Israel is sitting on a powder keg. And the only thing that causes them to survive is the protection of God. I mean, humanly speaking, there's no way that they should be able to defend themselves with a little sliver surrounded by enemies. The only answer is God. It really is. And that's why I think he said, because it's so precious, those that bless you I will bless, and those who curse you I will curse. And that's why it's so important. That's the reason I believe that the United States has has sustained itself so long is because we've always been an ally to Israel. And we'll fall very, very quickly when we are not an ally of Israel. And there's a possibility that, you know, as time goes on, we won't be, you know. There's not anything about the United States, per se, in the Scriptures in the end times. I don't know whether we fall. I don't buy into, there's so many Christians here who will be wrapped, they'll be raptured, and it'll be an insignificant country. I don't buy that theory. So, but these foundation stones show stability. And then I really like this in verse 21, and I say the wrong thing all the time. It's just out of habit. So I'm going to correct it tonight and try to correct it in all of my future sayings. In verse 21, and it says in the middle part, "And the street of the city was pure gold, as transparent as glass." Here's what I say that is wrong. The streets of gold. How many of you say that? Notice what it says. One street. The street of gold. And I've just, you know, and I caught myself years ago in my study of Revelation. Hey, it's not the streets of gold, it's the street of gold. There's one street of gold. Need to change that to a tune we like. So, but one of the things that is interesting is, think about this. When we get to the new heaven and the new earth and the new Jerusalem, everybody's going to live on Main Street. Everybody's going to live on Main Street. Not going to be any potholes. So, you know, I just put down here probably travel. It's not like we're just going to, you know, we're not going to be floating around on clouds playing harps with a halo. So, by the way, if you, speaking of halos, if you see, usually in Rome or cathedrals, a person with a halo and then over their head, and then a person with, looks like a square halo. Have you ever seen those? You know the difference? Right, and the other ones are saints that have been declared saints. So you don't need to worry. I mean, you don't need to follow that stuff because it's not true, but yeah. I mean, we don't have halos, by the way. Yeah, and all believers in Jesus Christ are saints. You're either saints or you're ain'ts. So, all right, and then 22, 1 and 2, we're not gotten into 22, but I just kind of want to show this, some of the sites that you'll see in the New Jerusalem. There's the river. Remember, there's no more sea, no longer a sea, no longer a sun. And so the river there is the is going to be refreshment. And, you know, there was a river in the Garden of Eden and the delights of the New Jerusalem in chapter 22, verses 1 through 5, which we'll start next week. We're returning to the Garden of Eden. The tree of life will be there. And we'll eat from the tree of life. And it'll bear different fruits every month, 12 fruits. So, and for those that love peaches, I'm sure you'll get peaches, you know. Doesn't say anything about peach ice cream, but. I think God can make ice cream without milk. Doesn't say there won't be any milk. Yeah. And then the throne, which represents sovereignty, in 22:1 says, "Then he showed me a river of water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and the Lamb." So there we see, you know, for the longest time I used to try to think that, you know, we'll only see Jesus in heaven because he's the pre-incarnate Christ, he's the incarnation. No one has ever seen God in his essence. But here it says the throne of God and Christ. I'm not sure how the Holy Spirit will manifest Himself, but you know that they'll all be there. I think. You know, I used for the longest time just think that we'd see Christ. We wouldn't see three, and I'm not sure how that'll work out. You know. And then 22:2 says, in the middle of its street. Notice that it doesn't say streets. On either side of the river was the tree of life, bearing 12 kinds of fruit, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree for the healing of the nations. And we'll talk about that next week when we go into detail about that. But here's the thing. Most of us, and we all understand this, what's one of our greatest enjoyments in our fellowship? Food, right? We fellowship around food. We have our first Sunday fellowship, which is one of the, I hate missing this Sunday, the third. One is, you know, missing hearing Miranda and Sue, but I'll get a private slideshow from them later. But that's the first Sunday, and I thought about, you know, postponing that to the next Sunday since I'm not going to be here on the third. And then I thought, nah, that wouldn't be fair, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no postponement on it. So Doug's got a good memory. Doug must not going to be here on the 10th. So yeah, he'll stick with the record. So it's already engraved in stone. And then last week I talked about the size. Does anybody have any questions about that? I went in pretty good detail about its size being 1,400 miles, and it says 1,500 miles in the New American Standard in verse 16. You remember the explanation for that? What's the NIV say? 12,000 stadia, which we get our word stadium from. It's a Greek word, actually, is pretty close to stadia. And a stadia is how many feet? 607, anywhere around there. I can't answer the question. I think Buse Fanning was on the, he was a New Testament professor that I had. And when somebody talks about New Testament and Old Testament professor, they're talking about they taught Greek or Hebrew. And I think he was actually on the committee that for the New American Standard did a lot of the translation. I can't answer the question why they said 1,500 miles, but I think 1,400 miles is more accurate. Maybe they rounded up. You know, some of them, they got in a discussion about the stadia and how many feet it was. But if you take 12,000 stadia, which it literally reads in the Greek text, 12,000 stadia, it uses that term that the NIV uses. If you multiply that by 607 feet in a stadia, you get 7,284,000. If you divide that by 5,280 feet, you get 1,380, or rounded up, 1,400. I don't know. Maybe the Greek guys weren't that good in math. I don't know. So, but the next time I see him or talk to him, when I go back to Dallas, I'll ask him that question. So, yes. That's where he's going to get the milk from. Make that ice cream, David. Yeah. Yeah, it's not going to be another. It's going to be the land of plenty. Yeah, but that's a great point. And, you know, I'm not so sure we'll need to eat. I don't know how that all works out, but yeah, but Jesus, yeah. Yeah, Jesus ate with his disciples after. But I'm not, I think it's, you know, I heard one time, and I'm not sure I'm in agreement with it, and I'm not sure that I'm in disagreement with it. But one of the reasons that we'll eat from the tree of life is to demonstrate our faith throughout all of eternity. You know, the tree of life. And that's the tree that Adam and Eve were protected from eating. Why? Well, they sinned, and then he protected them from the tree of life. If they had eaten of the tree of life, and kept eating from it, they would have stayed in a sinful state forever. You know? So that's an interesting concept. But I think that the main thing is that you have Genesis 1 and 2 and Revelation 21 and 22 as the bookends of the whole Bible. We start in a sinless state in the Garden of Eden with complete uninterrupted fellowship with God, and Satan is introduced, which, you know, represents evil. And then at the end, Satan is removed, and Adam and Eve were created without a sin nature. We'll have a glorified body without a sin nature. Evil and temptation will be removed, and we'll go back to the scene of the garden or paradise with complete uninterrupted fellowship with God. It's kind of a neat concept, you know. He is, but it says we will eat of it. And I think that's just shows, it's just enjoyment and fellowship, you know, with one another. And it's one of the great pleasures that God has given to us, you know, food. I mean, I'm looking around, y'all. Yeah. Everybody will have a glorified body. Everybody be bald. And, you won't have to worry about calories. Golf's a holy game. That's right. But I think the reason there's no golf in heaven is because I think he'd get bored of shooting 18 all the time. You know? Perfect score, 18.